From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 555. In this episode, Scott talks with Victor Yako about the use of alcohol in the tech industry.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. We're going to try something a little different today. I'm talking with Victor Yako, and he emailed me, actually, I think in May. It's been a while. We've been going back and forth discussing this about a podcast where we would talk about the culture of alcohol that we see in the tech community. How are you, sir?
I'm doing wonderful today, Scott. And you're right. It's been a while coming, but I'm really glad that you had me on the show, and I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah. Now, you regularly write and speak on kind of the, you know, the psychology of design and the tech culture, but also with regards to the idea that tech culture somewhat promotes alcohol use. What do you mean by that? Is it just like having beer at a company party?
Well, yeah, but I think it goes beyond that. So part of it stems from my background and my history with alcohol, which is I was working for a user-focused design firm, digital design, and I became sober. And I realized once I did how heavily prevalent alcohol and promoting the use of alcohol is in design and tech. And what I mean by that is really that it's everything from having the office keg and the beer fridge that we show off when we have clients over or potential future employees, to the networking events that we call happy hours and host in places like bars, and then even our conferences, which we know have in the past had problems with drinking and the behavior that can be associated with that. You know, we call them parties, and we have after parties where there's an open bar that people don't have to, you know, pay for the actual monetary cost for alcohol. And all that serves to create a culture that really suggests, hey, if you're part of us, you're drinking, you're okay with it. And I can only speak from my personal experience, but I know a lot of times, you know, when we're going to have a long, boring meeting, they either cater it with alcohol or they talk about the fact that maybe afterwards we're going to go have a happy hour to celebrate that we survived the meeting or have a happy hour that we landed a new client. And so what I realized was I still wanted to participate and be a part of things, but I couldn't do the drinking anymore. And that was a personal decision. But the way people talked about drinking around me was something that I had to then add on to the fact that I was trying myself to stop drinking at the problematic level that I had become a drinker.
Mm-hmm. So it's just you and I on the podcast, and I try to act as an advocate or as the, in the role of the people who are listening. And we realize that this is a complicated and intersectional conversation. So I can offer my actual thoughts and how I feel and how I, you know, how I personally deal with this situation. But then I will try to also kind of offer some of the perspectives that I imagine that people who are listening may also be. So I would ask that you and that people bear with us as we try to explore this this topic.
So, absolutely. And I'm open to, you know, exploring it as deep as you want to go. And, you know, yeah. I'm excited to do it.
So I guess they call it a teetotaler. I don't drink, but I don't drink for any particular reason other than I just never got around to it. The crowd that I hung out with in school didn't drink. I don't drink. And now I feel like I'm kind of on a roll, you know, I'm in my 40s and I never got around to it. So why start now? But I also come from a place of some privilege in the sense that I'm a man with a job, and I don't particularly feel like I've felt pressured to drink in order to keep my job. But I have heard from people in the community that who don't drink or may not necessarily be super secure in their job that they feel they need to go to these parties and participate in these parties, and that then they're pressured to drink alcohol. I haven't seen that, but is that if do people do that?
Well, I think that when you talk about pressure, some of that is internal, and so people might feel a certain pressure that they're putting on themselves while other people who are fine with alcohol don't necessarily realize that's what they're doing. So I think that's one thing. But I have heard, and when I've given presentations at events or conferences specific to the topic of alcohol, I've often had audience members either share with the whole audience or afterwards that, you know, they've been put in situations, and it seems to be particularly females who feel like they need to drink to stay a part of the in crowd where they're working, or that they've even been publicly called out for not being fun, for not participating in the drinking. And if we're talking about creating an atmosphere of inclusion where we want people, regardless of whether they drink or not, to feel welcome, then I think that that becomes a problem. If you don't have an issue with alcohol, that's fine. And you have to understand that everybody has their own individual relationship with alcohol, and it's not really on any one of us to determine whether or not it's right for someone to be drinking. And if someone's choosing not to drink, it really shouldn't be an issue, because it's not the kind of thing that becomes then offensive or overlaps into being your problem. If I'm choosing not to drink, it's actually because I'm aware of my limitations, or there might be a thousand other reasons, which are really none of anyone's business, related to medical conditions, related to mental health, and related to religion. And so where I find it a problem isn't that individuals are drinking or that individuals want to drink and have a good time, but when it becomes, I want to ask you when you show up to an event why you're not drinking, then it borders on what I think is exclusive environment that we create. And in tech, I think we've sort of been called out for doing that in other ways already. And so I think just by talking about it is one step towards raising awareness, because the alcohol is frequent and prevalent, that we might make assumptions everyone's okay with this and everyone wants to have, you know, the joke about let's go get go to the bar after work because it's been a hard day. And like, maybe I still want to go to the bar with you, but don't worry about it if I don't order alcohol.
Right. Now, when some people may have made it 5-6 minutes into this podcast, and they may already think that we're being, quote unquote, politically correct, or, you know, too, you know, everyone needs to just relax. If you don't want to drink, don't drink. What's the big deal? Right. People may be thinking that. But I think that point of being inclusive or exclusive, I think, is a good one. And I don't feel like we are trying to be politically correct. I think that you're proposing just trying to treat people like human beings. Like if we went to a pig roast, which is a thing, and I didn't eat pork, right? Like, there's pig. I've been to pig roasts, and like, hey, we're gonna roast a pig. Oh, I don't eat pork. You don't eat pork. That's weird. Why do you do that? Right. Like, justify your decision. No, I'm just not into it. That's just not my thing. That is a way of excluding. Well, simply saying, all right, well, we have hot dogs, or we have something else for you, and then simply calling it what it is.
Right. And I agree with that. And I think that I don't look at it as being politically correct, because I'm not trying to make the argument that, you know, alcohol shouldn't be a part of things. But what I am trying to argue is that we should be aware that it's not cookie cutter. So just like some people don't eat pork for a multitude of reasons, and we shouldn't think that that's an issue by accommodating them, that having decent soft drinks available at an event, not calling something, you know, a frat party or a happy hour where the assumption is everyone's going to get part of the open bar and part of the process of just being fitting in is going to be to drinking beer. That's something we can easily make small shifts in our language and how we talk about events and even how we plan events. You know, the company that I work for has tried to put a little more thought into things after I've been more vocal about my issues. And some of the things that we've come up with can still include alcohol. Like, for example, we have a company softball team, but the purpose isn't that we go out and drink as much as we can. The purpose of the event is to go play softball. And yes, some people drink, and they are the ones who are choosing to do that. And the people like myself who choose not to drink, there are other options available, but I'm not feeling like I'm the only person standing around not drinking. And so specific to like my situation where I was dealing with sobriety and the issues that come with realizing that, hey, you have a problem with drinking, you know, I felt like I couldn't expose that side of me to people because of the fear that comes along with that. Well, if I'm drinking a beer tomorrow after telling you I have an alcohol problem, what might that mean for my job and how people look at me? But at the same time, somebody who doesn't have that issue at all might feel completely comfortable in an environment where people are giving them a hard time about not drinking. But, you know, take yourself. I can't speak for you. But if someone were like, oh, Scott, why aren't you drinking? And you just say, I don't drink. Like, that's the end of the story. For someone who might feel that, like, that's not the end of the story because maybe a day before they were the one who was drinking and they were taking it too far, that can become a large barrier to participation. And when we do things, and I'm coming at from more of a consultant point of view where we don't have a product where I work. We serve other firms that do have products and we help them with their design and their development. But we often go out to happy hours and dinners with our clients and potential clients. And I want to be a part of that or somebody else but who might not.
Why don't you just say, I don't drink? And is that not the end of it?
Well, unfortunately, it's not always the end of it. I think that
because you know, I know the devil doesn't need an advocate, but let's bounce it back and forth a little bit here, right? I've been in the business now 25 years. I've never drank. It's actually funny. Like, I don't drink. I don't even know what alcohol tastes like. And I've for 25 years, from being 20 years old to being 40 and on, I just said no, I don't drink. And no one's ever pressured me. Is that because of who I am, because gender and or is that an age or is that luck? And are there people who they get pressed hard on that?
I mean, in some ways, I'd be guessing to say why it is that you specifically don't feel that way. But I can tell you from my own experience and from talking with other people that so part of it is definitely that if you haven't had the problem with it, then you might not feel like, oh, the spotlight's on me when I'm not drinking. Or there's some reason that people are going to know I've gone from being the fun guy at the party to the teetotaler or whatever, the dry and sober guy. Right. And so I think there's that level of aspect. But then I have found that people can be very juvenile about alcohol and alcohol consumption. And, you know, Scott, unfortunately, it seems to happen more and more as people consume more and more alcohol. And so I have been put in situations where, especially when I first became sober, I did go from the guy who always drank way too much to drinking nothing. And I was proud of myself, but I wasn't ready to expose that part of me to my colleagues, and we would wine and dine clients till late hours, and I was fine drinking all the Perrier, all the seltzer water that I could get my hands on at the bar and being a part of the conversation. But you know, I had some people, and some of them were in management positions, who would always pester me and say, okay, why aren't you drinking? And at that time, I decided I was going to use the excuse my wife was pregnant and I was just being supportive of her. And so then the conversation turned to, well, I bet you just can't wait till that's over and we can't wait to take you out drinking after that's done. And it's like, these are not the conversations that I want to have. And when I did come out and actually write and talk about my experience, these very people came up and apologized to me and said, oh, you know, I have family members that have this situation. You know, I would have never said these kind of things to you had I known. And to me, I accepted the apology and I understood at the time even that it was all supposed to be in good fun. But I also think it never had to happen because it never should have been a big enough deal. If somebody's not drinking, that's zero in terms of being a big deal. And if you're paying for it, it's actually a better deal for you as the one paying for alcohol that somebody's not consuming it.
So let me ask you this. I'm going to take a chance here and give you a possible analogy to something that relates to me, and you tell me if this relates at all. Okay. So if you and I are standing next to each other, you can't look at either one of us and tell that you had a problem with alcohol, and you can't tell that I'm a type 1 diabetic wearing an insulin pump and a half dozen different implanted systems to keep me alive. I was traveling in, you know, we look competent when you look at us, right? I was traveling in China.
That's always a speculation when people look at me. Maybe he's competent.
Yeah, kind of rough looking. I was traveling in China. I was working with another person. We were giving a workshop. And I'm traveling overseas. I'm managing my blood sugar. I'm dealing with time zones. It's an internal struggle that I'm not talking about with people, right? Mm-hmm. And then the day before the workshop, the person I was going with says he wants to go and try some really crazy food. He wants to try, you know, local native, you know, Chinese food, you know, squid or calamari, something I couldn't do. And I said, you know, I saw that there's a Subway sandwiches across the street. I know Subway. I know how much insulin I need to take. I know that if I eat Subway tonight, I will be successful at the workshop tomorrow. I know that if we go to eat something new and unusual, you're going to love it and you're going to have fun. You're a foodie, but I may spend all night long dealing with the outcome of that. I didn't really want to go and explain how diabetes works, how my blood sugar works, the fact that food isn't a joy for me. It is fuel. I just want to go to Subway. I want to eat my sandwich. And I want to do an amazing workshop. But the pestering from both the individual and the people around them was just incessant. And then I feel like I got to go and make a big deal out of it. And I'm a square. And then they all go off and have a great time. And I sit alone at Subway. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I
think that is kind of what I'm hearing you feel.
No, I think that you nailed it. I wanted to find a way to disagree with you somewhere or add to it. But I think that's a pretty dead on analogy. The thing that's wrong with you isn't visible. And it really isn't a thing that you want people to make a big deal about. In fact, it makes it worse when they do.
Yes. Like, can we not do this right now?
And the fact that, you know, you don't want to get into talking about it and describing it is, yeah, like, it's not something that I want to talk about. It doesn't make it better. It doesn't make it worse. It makes it inconvenient, and it makes me feel like I need to explain something to you. And you know, now then imagine that I don't have a problem because I can't control myself, which, you know, some people argue is or is not a disease. But I have a pregnancy that I don't want to tell you about, or a mental condition that I'm taking some medication that doesn't mix well with alcohol.
Right.
Why would I ever have to explain that to you in a way that, you know, especially if it's a more collegial relationship? But I actually say that you shouldn't even ask your friends about this kind of thing until they're ready to talk to you about it, because it is a very personal decision to make yourself exposed like that and say, like, this is my situation and this is something that has impacted my life to the point where I've decided to stay away from alcohol.
Okay. So I'm hearing, you know, we hear, you know, buzzwords or terms like diversity and inclusion. I prefer the word inclusion. It seems to me like you're just arguing for, let's just try not to exclude people unnecessarily.
Yeah. And I think that when I give my presentation that I've given at conferences, and when I talk about it, the ideas that I have for helping the situation aren't stop drinking, stop providing alcohol, don't ever talk about alcohol. Those, I think, are actually the wrong solutions, because I don't think it would work at all. I mean, prohibition didn't work for a reason. But B, I don't think that the problem isn't on the people drinking to solve it, but it's simple things like, if you're going to have an event and it's going to be at a bar, or it's going to have alcohol served, be explicit in the invitation that soft drinks will be available as well, because that does two things. It tells the person like me, there will be selection for me there at the event. But what it does beyond that is it says, and I'm welcome. I'm welcome to the point where you've specifically said this event has alcohol, but it also will have non-alcoholic options, meaning I want everybody to be there regardless of whether they're going to consume alcohol. When you make it such a focus on the open bar and the opportunity to drink heavily, that becomes a situation where anyone who is afraid of being confronted over why they're not drinking, or anyone who's afraid of possibly picking up a beer and breaking their sobriety, if that's their situation, they're going to be less likely to think that's an environment I want to put myself into. And if it's something where you're entertaining clients and you're making business decisions, it's really exclusive in a negative way to put someone in a situation where they're like, do I want to be perceived as a team player and understand what decisions and conversations took place at 2 a.m? Or do I want to stay at home where I know I'll be safe, but then I'll be looked at as the person who doesn't participate or doesn't come out and join the team after hours?
Yeah. I've always had, you know, that there's the concept of FOMO, F-O-M-O, fear of missing out.
Right.
You know, not drinking in high school and college did give me a certain amount of FOMO, you know, like, oh, I missed that. They're doing something amazing. And, you know, typically I hear that really amazing stuff doesn't necessarily happen just because, you know, you went out. But you definitely don't want people to feel like they're not a part of the team because of that. And
sure. And I think that when it becomes something where it happens frequently, it can become this mystery to other people. Oh, why don't you do this? And it can become a bigger deal than it really ever needs to be.
Right, exactly. Like, and I don't need people commenting on whether I'm going to eat that cupcake.
Right. Have you noticed Scott doesn't ever eat cupcakes? What is wrong with him?
Well, and that's another really interesting point. So trying to, you know, maybe this analogy did work. Like, I appreciate that you were looking for a reason to disagree, but I worked at an office once with another young woman who was diabetic, but she asked me to keep it a secret because she was afraid that the office would consider her possibly weak. Or not send her on trips for fear that her medical problem would become a business problem. And that shocked me. But it is, in fact, her right to do that.
Sure. Yeah. And I've thought about that in my own situation, which, so I worked for a very small-ish firm, you know, 50 or less people, and we were acquired a few years later, and I now work for like a couple hundred thousand person firm. And I've thought, like, you know, what if I'm looked at in a way where I'm damaged goods that they wouldn't want to send if they have a big client that they know loves to go out and have big parties at the bar. Like it's definitely not a situation I want to be in, prefer to be mm-hmm. in, but I do put myself in those situations. And it's because I'm comfortable enough with my relationship that I've developed with sobriety and with alcohol that I mm-hmm. know that I can do that. But like you said, if your colleague who, you know, didn't want to be perceived as weak, that's the same way I think some of us who have issues with alcohol feel. Like, I'm okay. Yeah. I don't want you to worry about me. I don't want you to not give me an opportunity because, oh, you know, Victor, he's made it clear he has a problem with alcohol, that right. we don't want to have him hang out with certain clients that really enjoy drinking or whatever.
Well, so, you know, we did this, we do inclusivity training at my company, and there was this really interesting video where there was one of the people in the video, and the gender isn't specific, had two young kids, and they weren't in the room. And one of the managers said, oh, well, we shouldn't send so-and-so on this trip because they have young kids at home. And that's, you know, and the implication was having young children would hold them back.
Right.
That's not that person's call.
Exactly. Right. Right.
And that is a way of excluding them as opposed to letting them be adults. Just as if I said, oh, well, you know, I've got kids, so I can't work the weekend, as opposed to a single person who, what, their weekend doesn't matter. So, you know, regardless of situation, when work is over, we should have our free time. We deserve that. And we should be able to go to events and feel comfortable and safe regardless.
Right. And my argument is that also, you know, I can be as social as anyone who's drinking. I'm the guy who wants the coldest bottle of fizzy water, and I'll sit in a bar scenario talking with people, and I don't have to have that added alcohol. In fact, what it means is I'm going to wake up and be productive for you the next morning. So just like your conference scenario or your workshop scenario,
right.
Sure, you could sit there and eat all the exotic food you wanted, but then you'd pay for it the next day, and then that's not the situation you want to put yourself in.
Exactly. Okay, so then let's try to put ourselves in the mind of the listener who's thinking, well, okay, maybe what Victor and Scott are saying is no hard liquor, but, you know, beer, how can beer be a problem, right? Like, beer never got anyone in trouble. Wine, open bar for wine. Drink tickets. What about drink tickets?
Well, I'm actually fine with this is my own personal opinion, but I think that having alcohol at events is still fine, and having drink tickets is fine. In fact, maybe it's even better if you have tickets, because that suggests that there's some level of limit that you're willing to put out for free as a company, or at least you're going to attach some accountability to people tracking how much alcohol they're consuming. I personally struggled with beer more than anything else, and whether the alcohol content is the same or not, you can obviously drink enough beer that it has the same effect as whether you were drinking whiskey or vodka or something harder. I just think that when you're having – so in an office setting, where you have like an open keg or something, you're asking people to be responsible and you're making some assumptions, which is that they are not going to make poor choices. But at the same time, you're putting yourself out there by saying, I'm going to have this perk or fringe benefit, whatever, of having free alcohol readily available. But what are you doing to then either ensure that it's being consumed responsibly or making sure there's other options available? And I can give you a real scenario where I work. Once we were acquired, the larger company said, no, you will not have an open keg. You will not have access to alcohol. And they didn't have an issue that it was us who had access to it, but they didn't want it to be a liability in the eyes of if there was ever anybody who was on the premises who wasn't going to be of age or anything like that. What they ended up doing, though, was that they got us a tab at a local bar and they got us a tab at a local coffee shop. And both tabs open at 1 o'clock in the afternoon every day. Every day since this happened, there is a line of our people from the coffee shop back to the office just about. And that's on a daily basis. And what it says to me is that what people are doing, what the alcohol represented, the open keg or whatever, was a community and, hey, take a break, have a beer with each other. Well, now the coffee is doing that and people are voting with their feet. And every day it's a very strong vote of, you know, 1 o'clock, there's like the great migration. We all go grab coffee. We sit in groups and chat. We bring it back to the office and chat. And it's accomplishing the same thing that I think the alcohol was meant to accomplish in some way, which was creating a community, suggesting to people it's okay to not just be nose to the grindstone here. You can have a beer with your colleague. And what it does do, though, is it allows people who are not interested in the beer to also have an option and to have the conversation and participate with a drink in their hand that they're more comfortable with.
So what about going all the way to the other direction then and just simply having no alcohol? Like, we just declare as a culture that it's just not what we're doing. But I was in Paris and I made that comment to someone recently and they looked at me like I was it was completely insane because wine is such a fundamental part of their culture. Could this be done is it a country by country or even state by state kind of a thing where it's just like, well, alcohol is always going to be a part of San Francisco, but maybe in the Midwest less so?
Maybe. I mean, I've talked to people who, you know, for example, a conference in Utah
is going to not have alcohol.
Right. And, you know, I'm going to one in May and it's not that they're trying to be more accommodating for me or for anybody. That's their culture. But then I've heard from people who are in the South where the culture is more of you don't do your heavy drinking in public that when they do have their conferences, it turns into a situation where people who aren't as used to drinking a lot then start to, and it can turn sour. I guess I would say that my argument isn't necessarily the shift towards removing the alcohol, because I think that's a really uphill battle. And what I would want to do would be just make it much less of an issue and less of a focus in terms of this is how we socialize, this is how we entertain, this is how we promote who we are, and often wrongly call it our culture, which, you know, a keg or a bottle of hard liquor that people can have access to is an artifact of a culture that says, you know, these types of things make us who we are, but it doesn't make your culture. So, you know, in the situation with my company, remove the keg, insert coffee, and the culture stayed just fine. In fact, I think it got stronger. So it's really, I think that I ask people who organize conferences and events and workplaces to say, what are we trying to accomplish with the alcohol? And are there other ways of doing this? Are there ways of making it even broader by including something else or thinking outside of the box? And that's what I like to see. And that's what I encourage people who do plan things to actually think about. What do I want to achieve with this? If I took the alcohol out of the equation, would it make the situation less enjoyable? If so, why do people need to get drunk or have alcohol to tolerate this situation that I'm putting them in? A.
Right.
B, you know, what could I do with that money that I'm spending on alcohol for other things that would make a situation or an event or a work setting enjoyable for everybody, regardless of whether they can consume alcohol or not.
Yeah, I like that. I feel like I heard you say that from a professionalism perspective and from a company perspective, it's not a reasonable thing to say that alcohol is a part of our company culture. Being social is, or spending time with each other and, talking and, being together outside of work and team building. Those are all cultural things, but mm-hmm. one shouldn't bake in alcohol into their company culture any more than they should say, pork is a big part of our culture here at the company, or, weed. We all smoke weed at the end of the day, or, there's a slippery slope there, right?
Right. No, I agree with that.
Interesting. Cool. Well, do you have anything else to give to the conclusion? What is the takeaway? What is the person listening to this podcast? What should they do at their company when they walk away from the show?
Sure. So if you're a listener, regardless of what your personal relationship with alcohol is, I would just ask that you think about the fact that not everybody consumes alcohol and experiences it the same way, and some people choose to completely not experience that, and it doesn't make it a bad thing. It's just different. And the personal ask I would make would be to simply never ask somebody why they're not drinking, and that's on the personal level. And on the broader level, it would just be, if you have an office setting where alcohol is openly available, or if you have a group or an organization that plans events and alcohol is often the focus, be more mindful of what are you doing to make sure that somebody who might be your colleague, and this is the scenario I often pose to people, is, I started writing successfully after I became sober. I wrote a book after I became sober. My personal life was straightened up after I became sober. But everybody was surprised that this happened because nobody knew I was struggling with alcohol. You might be sitting next to somebody who you like a lot, who you call a colleague, and they might be struggling with or have had this struggle in their past. What by simply saying, how are we accommodating somebody who might not want to be drinking alcohol but still wants to succeed and reach their full potential? Are we making sure that we say things like, this event will contain non-alcoholic beverages? Are we doing things that just make it obvious on the surface that it's not all about trying to be drunk and get drunk and leading to scenarios that might make people too uncomfortable to show up or too uncomfortable to stick around?
Very cool. Well, thanks for coming on the show, for being public about your opinion around this issue. And I appreciate you, and I appreciate the audience for coming along with us on this discussion.
Thanks, Scott. And I hope that, if you hear good things or bad things, that it at least keeps moving the conversation forward and raising awareness. And that's my hope for the whole thing.
And are you Victor Yacko on Twitter as well?
Yes, I'm at Victor Yacko, and feel free to follow me or shoot me a message on Twitter. And also, you can email me at victoryacko@gmail.com.
Very cool. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.